Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and we'll be talking about conscious compassionate awareness in today's show. We'll also be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. And welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good evening, Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
That was a trick, huh?
One of those are we there moments.
Are we there? Yes.
Miraculously,
I was.
That's good news.
Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Pardon me?
How are you doing today?
I'm just really well.
Great.
Thank you. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I've been under the weather for a couple of days, and now I'm on top of the weather, and and the weather is improving, and life is good. I'm living a life I love.
Great. What could be better?
And yourself?
I'm good.
Right.
And the sun is just peeking out here where I am, so it's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what should we do today?
Well, you know, I've really been hoping to get to some email questions, and the callers are stacked up here.
Huh.
Like Bay Area traffic, as I said last week.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, we like it like that.
Yes. Let's go to the callers.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Paul from Mountain View. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Paul.
Sherry.
Uh-oh.
Sherry, are you there?
Yes.
All right, this is Paul.
Hey, Paul.
So, here's my question.
Okay.
I am running into what I call the walking and chewing gum problem.
Uh-huh.
So, I have my watch reminding me every 8 minutes to come back to the breath.
Okay. And I like this already.
Yeah, sure. So, why not? So I notice I come back to about one or two breaths.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm kind of off and running again.
Uh-huh.
And so if I'm just sitting there on the cushion, you know, it's a little easier to stay with the breath for a little longer.
Uh-huh.
But when I'm out in the wild, I'm wondering, how do I kind of stay present with whatever it is that I'm doing?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can talk about that a bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just a matter of practice.
Mm.
It really is. And, you know, do you play the violin?
I do not.
Okay. So if you took up the violin, you know that there's going to be a period of time from your decision to take up the violin to playing something that doesn't cause people to cover up their ears.
Right.
Yeah. And it would be a lot of practice that would be involved. That's exactly like awareness practice.
Uh-huh.
And somehow we think, now we know that playing the violin is hard.
Yeah.
So we expect that we would have to put in some time and focus and attention and really work at it. And we also, with the violin, at least I would kind of guess that I would probably never be very good at it. Even if I put in a lot of time with it.
Oh.
With awareness practice, it takes a lot of time, and you can get really good at it no matter when you start.
Uh-huh.
So my favorite story about that is the person who said to me, early on in practice, you know, this is really hard. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. And 2 years later was telling me a story about something and said with this kind of amazement, and, you know, I wasn't present for any of it. Okay, so this person had gone from, I don't think I can do this, to being present in life enough that they were shocked to have gone through an entire instant not right there aware of it.
Uh-huh.
2 years is very short.
Mm.
But it all depends on how much you want it.
Uh-huh. So I'm sitting regularly and reliably, and every 8 minutes I get a little reminder, except when I'm sleeping, of course.
Uh-huh.
Is it just a matter of keeping going, or are there other things I would want to try?
Well, you know, of course you could set your watch for 4 minutes, you know, do the advanced course.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I do all of those things that I mean, the things that I recommend, like getting a new ring or writing something on the back of your hand or however out there you're willing to get. To do things in your life that cause you to be present. And then a lot of it is a commitment. It's a willingness.
Mm.
So as you say, you know, you can take a couple of breaths and then you're gone again. Well, a couple of breaths, a couple of present conscious breaths is actually quite good. And you can actually train yourself, make an agreement with yourself and keep that agreement that you're going to actually stop and stay with the breath for 2 breaths, and then you're going to go on about your life.
Mm.
As you do that, your system will naturally bring you back with greater regularity. So you can decide, for instance, one of my favorites was the woman who decided every time she saw something green, she would come back to the breath. Okay, every time, and you change it up. You know, every time you see a Volkswagen, you come back to the breath. Every time you see a man with a mustache, you come back to the breath. Every time you, okay, and you make a game out of it, and you say thank you every time you come back, and you really enjoy that breath. And before long, as I say, the system is just reminding you, coming back, even when there was nothing there that triggered you to be consciously aware of the choice to come back, you realize that you're actually training yourself to be present.
And so there's this thing where, okay, I'm present, but I'm also doing something.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And
we can do everything and be present.
It's like there's a piece of my mind which says, but being present is like the one thing, and then if I'm doing that, I can't really be doing anything else.
Oh, it's what it's like. Now this is not exactly it, but it's a fun thing to practice with. So right in the middle of your back, kind of lower mid back.
Okay.
Imagine that's where the center of awareness is.
Okay.
And it expands out like a spotlight.
Oh.
And it includes everything that is in your sphere. So let's, you know, it's on your back. So it's everything that's to the front, the sides, up and down.
Okay.
Okay? And so just picture that. Everything in that area is included in your awareness.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now after you go on for a while, you won't limit it to that. But for right now, that would be really huge.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So there's the awareness. And now you're going to move around inside that awareness.
Right.
And that awareness is going to be aware of everything that you're doing. So you're thinking about something, you're driving in your car, you're walking down the street, you're in a project, you're typing at your computer. And awareness is aware of all of that happening. And attention is moving inside that field of awareness. So your attention may be on what you're writing, but awareness is aware of you there writing and attention on what you're writing.
Hmm.
So it's very expansive. It's not a closing down. It's not taking that spotlight and turning it into a pen light.
Right.
Not that. It's not turning it into a laser that goes from thing to thing to thing. that laser that goes from thing to thing to thing is attention. But it's moving in the field of awareness.
Okay.
And that awareness is what you are.
Oh.
Can you picture it?
Yeah, I think I can.
Yeah, and you can let me know. But I think it'll be helpful if you imagine that it's radiating out from a place, you know, behind you, so
okay.
that it's including you and everything in the world.
Huh.
It's illuminating everything, and then there you are moving around inside that illumination.
Huh.
Practice it and let us know, okay?
I'll play with that. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Celia from Seattle. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Celia from Seattle. It's so lyrical, isn't it?
Huh?
Like a song title. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
I'm Rocky.
Uh-huh.
I'm very happy to be talking to you.
Rocky yet fine.
Rocky yet fine.
Very
Sherry, first of all, I just want to tell you, express my deep gratitude to the work you're doing.
Uh-huh. Well,
thank
you.
It's been leading me. I've been following it, and it's taken me a long way.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to talk about where it's brought me to today.
Great.
You talk about it in trying to be human.
Uh-huh.
One of the things you talk about is that when you sit, everything arises, including those things we thought we left back in our childhood.
Yes. Sometimes it seems especially those things.
Yeah. And so particularly during the last Osashin I sat, I had very early childhood things come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you would talk about this when this happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's very overwhelming to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Shall I give a little perspective?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know how when you have little kids, they can be marginally well-behaved. Until you get them someplace like a grocery store. And then they seem to take that as a signal to become little monsters.
Hmm.
You ever have that experience with children?
Mine weren't so bad, actually, but I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, if you've been in a grocery store with little kids, you can get a sense of it, okay?
Yeah.
And here's my projection onto that. If they're alone with mom or dad in the car or whatever, there's a certain fear factor, okay?
Would you say that again?
Pardon me?
A certain what factor?
Fear.
Fear, F-E-A-R?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you're never quite sure that mom and dad aren't actually going to kill you,
mm-hmm.
okay? So you get into a place like a grocery store, and there are all of these other people around, and little kids intuitively know that their parents are going to behave differently in the grocery store than they do alone in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's a safe place to act out.
Uh-huh.
And so they kind of push. They push limits and rules and that sort of thing. And it's really true. The parents are going to try to control themselves. You know, they're not going to jerk them up by the arm or do any of that threatening kind of stuff because they have to be careful how they're acting because they're in a public place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's that picture. Now, there you are sitting. Okay, and what you're doing sitting is at least attempting to be at center, to be with conscious, compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting in meditation and you're breathing and everything gets quiet. And two things happen. One, you're not actively pushing away the things that are unacceptable to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you can't be doing that if you're just sitting there breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you're creating a safe place for things that have been deemed unacceptable to arise. And so they do. Now, if we can stay disidentified, if we can stay with conscious, compassionate awareness, then those unacceptable, and I'm making little quote marks in the air, of course, those unacceptable things arise into compassionate acceptance, and they're healed, okay? Because they never were unacceptable. They're just things that they could be sad, they could be frightening, they could be whatever, but there's nothing wrong with the person, the child, that they happen to. Okay, so that child is still out there, kind of in, lost in time and space, looking for an opportunity to be embraced. Okay, so that's the best case scenario, that you stay centered, there's conscious, compassionate awareness, this memory, this feeling, this experience from long ago arises, and it's embraced, and it's healed. It's liberated. Okay? What often happens is that because we've been pushing it away for so long, here it comes in, and we get identified with somebody who says, oh, no, this is awful, this is too upsetting, this is horrible, I can't stand it. And then we've left conscious, compassionate awareness. We've left that place of embracing and expansiveness and healing. And we're now identified with the childhood scene. We are now recreating the karma that we were actually sitting in an attempt to liberate. You with me?
Yeah.
So it's always the work. You know, that's basically what Paul was asking earlier. You know, how do you stay disidentified? And we're attempting it when we're sitting on the cushion in formal meditation. Obviously, something arises, we drop it, we come back to the breath, we come back to center. When we're walking around in the world, we're attempting not to get caught up in the story, in the karma, in the identity. We're attempting to drop everything, come back to the breath, be at center. But it's hard because the karmic habits are so deep. So we get identified, we get pulled out of center, there we are, back in our childhood stuff, and it shouldn't be, but it's often a shock to us every time it happens.
Okay. So the upset that's around this, these things that are coming up,
yeah, the upset is the identification with the person who finds this upsetting. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are lots of parts of you who don't find it upsetting. They might see it as unfortunate or sad or whatever.
Yeah.
They might see it as a spiritual opportunity, something to be embraced, to let, be let go. You know, if it were a story that about something that happened to somebody else, we basically don't even care. So
yeah.
There's nothing in this life that is inherently upsetting. What's upsetting is that it's upsetting to us.
Yeah.
And when we get identified with that person who finds it upsetting, then we're kind of off to the races.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
That's it. So, you know, it can be helpful to bring conscious awareness to this process in the sense that you sit down and you say, my work is to stay conscious and present for whatever arises. My work is to stay at center, to stay in conscious, compassionate awareness, no matter what. And I intend to do the very best I can to do that. And sometimes you will, and sometimes you won't. And the times that you do feel really good, we enjoy those. The times when you don't, there's the feeling of, we hope, okay, well, this is why I sit. This is why I practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Very good.
Good. Thank
you,
Sherry.
Your assignment, should you choose to accept it. And it sounds like you do.
What else is there?
There's no, we have no choice. So we might as well. Thanks, Celia.
Thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
When I ask Celia, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have two more callers lined up.
All right. And like we're still in the first segment.
We're still in the first half of the show.
Wow.
I'd like to welcome Jeffrey from Philadelphia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I had an assignment, and I wanted to report back.
Okay.
I've been singing with a band, and we were talking about singing with earplugs.
Yes.
Because I was concerned about that.
Give a little background now. So there's a part of you who's concerned about going deaf.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But somebody else really wants to sing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And ego had me convinced I could stop singing altogether, which was very sad.
Uh-huh.
Or I could go deaf, which was also very sad.
That's right. You leave it to ego to present two completely dismal futures and then try to get you to choose between them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so what did you come up with?
I came up with singing with earplugs.
Uh-huh.
And it's well, actually, you came up with that. But I've been doing it, and it's been wonderful.
Great.
Very grateful.
So
it was a new skill, and ego did not want to learn to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I've been
so
doing
you get
it,
to
and
sing,
wonderful.
And you don't go deaf, and ego is not happy.
That's right. I've been having lots of fun, but ego's not happy. That's true.
Yeah. It's just crazy, isn't it? I mean, until we start really paying attention, we think that ego is on our side, that it's really trying to make life work for us. And then we start getting a glimpse of it like this, and, you know, there it is. You'd think it would be just right there in the front row, just applauding and ecstatic, but it's not. It's trying to figure out the next way to sabotage you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of which,
it's already come up with something.
I just had I had some clarity about something actually, and have a lot of gratitude for that. I had a gig last night.
Uh-huh.
Sang with the band, and I saw a pattern that has been happening for a long time, where I'll do the show, and I'll be as present as I can be, and that's fine, it's wonderful. But after the show, it seems like the show is a wonderful experience, and then after the show, it seems like the pendulum kind of swings the other way, and there's this really profound loneliness after feeling all that connection with the people that I'm playing with and with an audience and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you see with that?
I saw that trying to last night, I saw that I really wanted to distract myself from this very strong emotion, and the distraction of my choice wasn't available to me, and I survived anyway.
Yeah. And so I want to present this to you and just see if it fits at all with your experience, or again, if it's something that you might be willing to try. Because here's my best projection.
Yeah.
There you are. You know, you're out. You're a real focus of attention. You're performing. People are enjoying it. You know, it's very high kind of energetic time.
Yes.
But there's a part of you that doesn't take care of. A part of you who feels maybe unseen or You know that place that a lot of us get to of, you know, if they really knew who I am, they wouldn't like me?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for a lot of us, it's a teenager who feels that way, but it can carry over it throughout a lifetime. And so I'm projecting that there is somebody in you who comes home from something like that,
mm-hmm.
and he needs attention. He needs an attention that he didn't get through that performance.
Mm.
And I think, I know, it's up to you to get to know him and find out what he needs and give that to him. Not to distract yourself from
right.
the emotion, because that's a way, you know, he's already been left out. And then you distract yourself from his feelings, and he's left out once again.
Mm.
But really to sit down with him and say, what's going on? You know, how are you feeling? What do you need? What would be helpful to you? What would make a difference for you?
Yeah. My part of usually what I try to do is have other people do that.
Yeah. But he needs it from you.
Yeah.
Because you're the only one who is really going to understand what he answers.
Hmm.
Because you lived through all of his life experiences. And from center, which is probably the only place, at least pretty close to center, will be the only place from which you can ask those questions.
Yeah.
There's that acceptance that we were talking about a few minutes ago. There's that embrace. You know, it's
yeah.
okay for him to be who he is and to feel whatever he feels. There's a place for him, too. He's important to you, too. Not just that guy who gets up on stage and performs and everybody loves.
Right.
But him.
It was, yes, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Last night after the show, it was difficult to find that centered place.
Mm-hmm.
Center seemed like a really intellectual kind of pursuit. It
yeah.
seemed inaccessible somehow. You know?
Yeah, and yet you know what you would want somebody else to ask you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, you know that if you were in a situation with a friend of yours who seemed to be having this experience, you would know what to ask him.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's really quite simple. With just about anybody, it's what's going on. How do you feel? What do you need? Is there anything I can do? And for most of us, it's simply being given an opening to express how we feel and to have that accepted. We don't want to be fixed. We don't want to be changed. We just want to be accepted.
Yeah. Is it possible to do that now?
Sure.
Okay.
You can do it anytime.
I don't have to wait until I'm in that.
No. Oh, no. In fact,
wait.
It's way better to get to know him when
yeah.
it's not a crisis.
Yeah.
And there's a little technique, I don't know if you know this, but because he's probably fairly young, even though he may be manifesting as somebody older emotionally, mm-hmm. he's probably very young, so you can write to him. You write with your dominant hand, you know, tell me what's going on, or you can project onto him. You know, it seems to me like you're feeling lonely, and then put your pen in your non-dominant hand and let him write back. You can't do it with a computer. It's got to involve the hands.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's really wonderful.
All right, you got more homework, huh? Every time you call in, you get an assignment, huh?
I like that. I also have a lot of gratitude for a group that's affiliated with your monastery. It meets here in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. And one of our monks is coming there soon.
Yes,
I was just talking to her, and she was making her flight plan, so I know that it's something that's going to happen. So,
yeah, all of that really helps with homework. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Keep us posted.
Will do.
All right, thanks Jeffrey. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
Isn't that good? We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people. I'm enjoying this show today.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to welcome Cindy from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello there.
Hi.
I called at the end of last week's show.
Uh-huh.
I'm calling to report back on my studying.
Good, good.
I called just at the very end. We only had like a minute, so we sort of chatting. My interesting thing is I've gone back to school after many years, and some of the same demons I had long ago are still there. Funny that, isn't it?
Amazing.
Yes, and because I didn't know about awareness then, now I do. And the funny thing is, when I called last Tuesday, I had just written the exam, so I already know. I've been listening to the archives, and of course, I listen to that show again. And it's very interesting to listen to it again, because the day that I listened to it, the day that I was in part of the show, as the other people were speaking, I was getting a certain amount out of what they were saying. But of course, the entire time I was wondering when my turn was coming.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And listening to it again this week, when the exam was over, I wasn't on the phone. I got like a whole other, many other things out of that show. It's really interesting to listen.
Aha. Uh-huh. And we can guess that life is a lot like that, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so since the last show, I read the Fear book, which is very perfect timing to read that. Perhaps should have read it before the exam, but anyhow, read it now. And I wanted to describe the feeling, though, because and I had an assignment to do today, and it went better in that I did was able to stay more present and sort of see the voices there and just keep moving through them. But one thing you said at the end of the last show was, what you do know that doing well on the exam and having pain and suffering during the studying process are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get it then, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that that's, to me, that's sort of, they're synonymous.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing is, during that, just before I wrote that exam, and again, writing the exam is easy. The exam to me is not stressful. It's the preparation that's stressful.
Uh-huh.
Right? By the time it's time to write the exam, I'm like, I'm always ready, so no stress there. But the interesting thing is that the most strongest feeling, the strongest identification I had in the whole studying process, and there was a lot of moments like that, was I sat down. I mean, I couldn't believe I did this because I've never, in the middle of the worst of it, I actually sat down on the cushion and tried to meditate. Mm. And, you know, just getting on the cushion is like an accomplishment during that moment. But still, so I was trying to say the, you know, we are not here to end suffering, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to the part that said, if I am suffering, it is because I'm choosing something over ending suffering.
Mm-hmm.
The what came up at that moment was very powerful, and basically the feeling I had was, I'm not choosing this. This is choosing me.
Wow.
I felt like, I was very clear that I felt sort of possessed by this conditioned beliefs that were running the show.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it's like, God, I wouldn't choose this for a million years. I don't want this.
Yeah.
So when you said those two processes are two different things, and again, like, you know, so the past week I've been looking at that a lot, but I know that there's something incredibly powerful about that conditioning.
Oh, yes.
That made me feel that way, that I was so identified that I thought, no, I'm here sitting aware. This is this other thing that I don't really have any power over this thing.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes. Now, we can have, of course.
Yes.
But until we do a great deal of work, we can't. We don't.
Right.
Yeah, it's... the pull, you know, as Buddhists, of course, we talk about it as karma.
Right.
And the pull of karma is nigh on to irresistible for almost everybody.
Right.
And once we get the hang of what we're talking about here, then we start, you know, I've always been a religious type, so... you know, I know how Jesus handled this, and I know how the Buddha handled this, and I know how Gandhi handled this, and I know what Mother Teresa had to say, you know, all my heroes. And it's universal. It is the struggle that human beings are in, whether you call it a moral struggle or an ethical struggle, or you see it as a struggle to awaken in suffering. It's the same process. How do I pull myself up out of that quagmire of ego and desire and suffering and dissatisfaction? How do I get my head above water and experience another possibility such that I can actually even entertain the notion of making another choice.
Right.
Yeah.
Now
it's
huge. Yeah. What's transpired since then is that, and I, you know, like conditioning says, oh yeah, well you saw it, but you're going to lose it. You saw that you had this insight. But I'm going to take it away from you so you lose it. So I can, even as I'm about to say it, I think, don't say it because then it's out there and then it could be taken away. But anyhow, for a number of days now, I have understood that fear, like everything else that I'm, is just a thought I'm having.
Yes. It's a habitual thought.
Right.
Yep.
And then sort of like what you're alluding to when I said about having watched the show again, that it's like it's just the thought, and it's, you know, give, you know, tomorrow at 5 o'clock I won't have that thought. I'll have another thought.
Uh-huh.
That it's a thought that I've created and that happens to be here now. It's not a thing. It's just a thought. It's
yes,
just a,
and I would be careful even about the notion of I've created.
Right, yeah.
Because that's kind of the awareness that you had.
Right.
Whoa, wait a minute, I'm not in charge of this.
Yeah.
This is just something that comes in and takes over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I've seen this week, which is really interesting. It's what I've found in practicing is that you think you get something as you read it, and then, you know, 6 months later you realize that you might have got it, but it was at a different level or something.
Oh.
So I listen to these archives, and I'm like, every single time, they're like, wow, I didn't hear that the last time. This is like unbelievable. Anyhow, these archives and these podcasts, I commend you guys for doing that. It's really great.
Yes, thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
But the other thing that I've really understood this week, and again, conditioning wants to tell me that I'm going to lose it, but anyhow, is this the real understanding of self-hatred, which before I was thinking, okay, well, every time I tell myself, you know, you shouldn't eat that, or you should, you know, get back to studying, all those things, all those sounds, all those
meaning
words,
yeah,
were self-hatred.
Uh-huh.
But about 48 hours ago, I realized that anything in my body, any sensation I'm having about myself, about the world, any time I'm doing that, that is self-hatred, because it creates a feeling in my body that's not a feeling of love and sort of openness.
Yes.
And so it's just not just all the words, it's the sensations that I create in my body through all...
Well, now, once again, be careful.
Yeah.
Because,
right.
You know, conditioning wants you to be the originator of all of this. And when
right.
we look closely, we realize, wait a minute, I'm listening to these voices.
Yeah.
You know, I'm feeling these sensations. I'm being told that there's a meaning. I'm actually not making this up. It's like I just walked into a movie set. You know, I actually can't take responsibility for the script or the other actors. It takes a while for us to get to that centered place, to get centered enough that we can say, okay, I can actually be an actor now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another level that I hadn't even heard in
it's
my...
It's so exciting, isn't it?
It is really exciting, I'll tell you. As I said, it's the fantastic thing about taking these courses is that, which, you know, it's an unexpected byproduct of doing this, which is like, wow, I am determined to look at this time around.
Yes.
And boy, is it hard, but man, it's like, wow, I got lots of opportunity to practice through.
That's
this.
Right. And if you get awareness out of this return to school, you are a winner 1,000 times over.
Right.
Whatever that degree is going to pale in comparison.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's
all
funny because you know, the real thing would be to fail and still be okay with it. That would be the ultimate.
That's right.
Not that I intend to do that, but you know, that would be wow. I would have got somewhere.
And of course, there would be no way that you could experience it as a failure.
Right, exactly.
Which is a huge window into how life works.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. Anyhow, thank you so
much. We're going to stay tuned.
All right.
Take care. Thanks, Cindy.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Cindy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I am so excited for once that we do not have any more callers right now. I have an email question here that is
all right.
Many...
Well, I just want to say one thing before we move on to that question, and that is that I just love to hear people in the place that people are in when they call into this show. You know, that excitement, that adventure. It's like, even if there's something painful, there is the possibility of seeing through it, of being able to have an understanding of how life works that enables us to live a life of freedom instead of a life of hope and dread.
Yes.
And it's just, I'm listening to people get turned on to that possibility is just, I think, the greatest thrill in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And I can go right there. I mean, I can remember the moment that I fell in love with awareness practice. When I got it that there is something more than this limited little perspective that I'm stuck in. That there's a way to step back and actually see life as it is, rather than being caught in what I've now learned to call karma. It's the best. It's the best.
Good deal. It's a good deal.
And people, you know, there's such a dread of it because, of course, people are caught in ego and caught in in conditioning, and conditioning doesn't want to take this trip. And so to hear people move beyond that and get to that place of saying, all right, ego, you're holding what looks like a better hand than I have right now, but by golly, I'm going to stay in this game until I learn how to win it.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Yes.
So did you have an email?
Say that again?
Did you have an email? I got a little wound up there.
I do have an email. I'm all, Mom, what, you wound me up too. The courage I project onto people.
Pardon me?
The courage I project onto people who call in.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because there, to me, it takes courage until the bug bites you.
Yes.
And then once you recognize I am an awareness junkie,
yes.
You know, I will face anything.
Yes.
If it leads to greater awareness, I don't care what I see. I don't care what the voices say. I don't care what happens. I want the awareness.
Yes.
And then it's just. You know, it's the thing that I've always said, you know, people talk about saints, Catholic saints, or saints in any tradition, you know, and the deprivation and the hardship and what they go through. And I'm thinking, they're not going through anything. They're ecstatic. They want to do this. You know, they love God. St. Francis lying out in the cold looking at the moon, writing love sonnets to God, was not an unhappy man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Great.
Very fun.
I do have several email questions here.
All right.
And I think we have time for the first one at least. Dear Sherry, during last week's program, you were talking with a caller about the practice, and you stated that you encouraged people who do the practice not to socialize. This statement caught my attention because I have been noticing that the further I get into the practice, the less I really want to socialize. I am very content to spend time by myself or with a few close friends. But I have also noticed that conditioning has a great deal to say about this. I am constantly getting bombarded with statements like, "What's wrong with you? You are turning into a hermit. You're going to die alone," etc. I was both intrigued and encouraged by your statement and would love to hear you talk a little more about this idea. Gasho from a caller in Seattle.
In where?
Seattle.
All right. Well, there's just so much to it. You know, there are a couple of things. One, my encouragement is for people who practice together not to socialize.
Mm.
I actually don't care if people socialize.
I see.
Because socializing is an interesting place to see what goes on.
Yeah.
So, you know, if a person tends toward being a hermit, they're happy that way, they like that, they prefer quiet, that's great. If you have the kind of personality that, you know, is very outgoing and you like to be around people, that's not a difficulty. Most everybody has family, friends, people that they are in some way almost obligated to be in relationship with.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's a problem. Socializing with people with whom we practice is, as far as I can tell, always 100%, no exception, a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And the reason is what we talk about here constantly. Conditioning is right there to sabotage everyone's best efforts at liberation, at freedom, at, you know, being aware and paying attention. And so my teacher used to talk about it as kitchen darshan, where people would get together and they can't actually tell the difference between supporting one another's conditioning and actually doing practice.
Yes.
So people will sit around and gossip about other people in the Sangha, or they will talk about the teacher, or they will pick apart a workshop, or they will whatever it is. And because the topic is practice, they think it's practice. So I always encourage people, yeah, I know, you know, other places are different, and this is an unusual way of going about it. And as I'm always fond of pointing out, I don't follow people around to determine what they're doing. You know, it's the honor system. This is just my encouragement to people, that to have a place where you can come and practice, and as much as possible, nobody knows who you are. They don't know what you. They don't know anything about you except you are the person who comes there and meditates with them, who goes to workshops with them, who's on retreat with them. You know, they don't know where you came from, or, you know, they might hear you talk about something in group that alludes to a past or a job or whatever. But it's not that personality, conditioned, egocentric, karmic stuff that so much of society revolves around.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to have a place that you can come and not be a personality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's interesting. You know, in the beginning, people just fight it. They hate it. You know, especially, you know, I'm single. Come on. What better place to meet a potential partner? You know, I want to be involved with people who are also spiritual. I want my friends to be. So, you know, it's like a one-stop shopping center for all of my needs. And that's not what it is. You know, you have to go somewhere else and find your partner. You have to go somewhere else to find your friends, because all we do in this Sangha, anyway, is practice together.
Yes.
And it makes it very, very safe. We don't have to worry that we're going to say something in a discussion group, in a workshop, or a retreat, and then somebody's going to refer to it when we're out to dinner on Saturday night. It's just
right.
Go out to dinner with different people. It solves the problem.
Yes.
Yeah. And all people are spiritual people, and all people are good people, and all people have a great deal to offer. So wherever we are, whatever kind of setting we're in, it's an opportunity for us to come back to center and an attempt to be conscious compassion and awareness to the best of our ability in whatever that setting is.
Great.
That took care of that.
That took care of that one. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's do it again.
Let's meet next week.
All right.
Okay, good night.
Good night.